This podcast is brought to you by Knowledge at Wharton.
Google has been ordered by a judge to turn over documents to the Labor Department to show whether or not it may be intentionally paying women less than men for similar types of work. It is the latest instance of concern over gender pay, and that worry goes well beyond Google, even to commercial real estate. A recent white paper looks at how the issue is affecting that arena. Joining me in studio, Marcy Hart, who is a partner at the firm of Fox Rothschild here in Philadelphia, as well as a member of the Commercial Real Estate Women's Network. And on the phone with us is Jennifer Carey, who's CEO of JLC Environmental, and she's also chair of the Commercial Real Estate Women's Network. Marcy, great to meet you. Thanks for coming in. Greatly appreciate it.
Oh, pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Jennifer, great to have you with us today.
Thanks for having us.
I guess before we get into the commercial real estate end of it, we were talking before we went on the air, just recap your reaction to the story surrounding Google right now.
I find the decision really fascinating, this issue with respect to transparency. I mean, obviously, the way Google proves non-discrimination is through transparency, yet that was their argument against producing this documentation. And to me, the transparency will go a long way to solving this issue.
Jennifer?
Well, one of the things that our Crew Network Foundation research points out is that transparency would actually improve the gender pay gaps that we see across, you know, pervasive across many industries, including commercial real estate. So I'm very interested to see how this all shakes out.
Well, many people when we hear this story, aren't really surprised, Marcy, that, you know, this is an issue that has been brought up time and time again, especially in the last couple of years, surrounding Silicon Valley. And we were talking about kind of the culture where Silicon Valley is considered to be maybe not as much the proverbial old boy network that a lot of firms or companies or sectors may be. This is more of a youth sector right now, maybe a different thought process, but seemingly some of the issues that are in a lot of sectors right now are purveying themselves in Silicon Valley.
Yeah, obviously it's pervasive and it's throughout every industry, which is, I think, really, really interesting. We discussed it yesterday when we discussed this white paper. The fact that this would be pervasive in commercial real estate is not particularly surprising. But the fact that it would be pervasive in the tech industry, which is younger, more liberal, is, I think, just so interesting and says a lot about society and how pervasive this issue is.
Jennifer?
Well, one of the things, as an entrepreneur myself, I realized that when you have an organization that's founded by, you know, the male gender, of course. I mean, we want people to found companies. But as more women found companies, there's a thing called affinity, which you probably heard of, where you relate more to people who are like you. So if a man starts a company and he has hired his team around him, I mean, Sheryl Sandberg is obviously an example of where a woman has reached the top of that game.
Right.
But it's oftentimes where affinity. We find that affinity is one of the things that creates this kind of, maybe male-heavy, you know, C-suite kind of rationale. And then around that, you find that, you know, you're going to have, and even in the Trump case, which I know you were going to mention,
yeah,
there was something about the pay gap between men and women and his staff as being high. Now, we're not political and we don't speak to politics, but it's when you have, you know, when you have someone who's like you that you hire, then, and if you're a man and it's another man and you guys go play golf together, those are the kind of things that maybe where we don't see women having a chance to make a breakthrough. But I do find that when women start companies, and they've been doing so in greater and greater numbers, you know, since the 1980s,
right,
we're going to see that eventually change. But it's a slow process, unfortunately. We don't want it to take 100 years, but we do hope that our research that Crew Network Foundation does will shine some light, at least in our particular corner of the world, and maybe some light in the other areas where what can we do to change some of these pervasive social norms that we see that perhaps contribute to this kind of thing.
Well, the Trump case, and for those people that don't know what we're referring to, there was a story out, as Jennifer alluded to, about what the salaries are of the people that are working at the White House. And that's something that they are required to do under federal law by July 1st of that first year, is to be able to give a complete listing of who is hired at the White House and what that pay is. And that number, the difference on it, I believe, was like you know, $30,000 or $40,000 on average between what women were being paid in the White House and what men were being paid in the White House. And I guess the question is, and I don't think the research totally kind of dug into this, but the question is what jobs were they actually doing in the White House? I mean, were they comparing it to similar jobs as to what the Obama administration had? Were they going off of, you know, general, you know, top earners versus middle level earners versus lower level earners? So there's still some questions that need to be asked. But again, the data shows that there is a difference in terms of who is being paid what, at least in the White House.
And again, our research shows that there's issues like affinity. There's different things that society, you know, just be, you know, the norms that we've grown up with have, you know, I wouldn't say put a label on someone, but when you have this research, it can help you overcome the unconscious biases that we all see from time to time in our workplace. And, you know, they're not going to all go away magically, but if we all work together to, you know, we have some action items where, you know, you kind of, where if you're in a meeting, for example, our research shows that if you're in a meeting, one of the ways to, if a woman makes a great idea and pitches her idea in a meeting, you know, a senior executive, and it's kind of given the, you know, pushed off to the side, but then, you know, 20 minutes later, someone, a man, might say the same thing. And what one of the things that we suggest people do is, oh, that's a great idea that Marcy just suggested, you know, 10 minutes ago. Marcy, do you have anything else to add to that great idea that you thought up? I mean, it's a way to try to redirect the yeah. question and redirect the energy so that we can actually have, you know, be respected for our contributions from you know, our gender. And, you know, I heard somewhere, I think it was, I forgot who spoke at one of our conventions. Crew Network has a series of leadership summits every year, and we have a convention every fall that we, where we host over, you know, 1,500 commercial real estate executives and professionals come together. And we had a speaker that talked about how in a Middle Eastern country, Bill Gates went to speak there, and the women and the men were separated by a wall, a lattice wall, and the women sat on one side and the men sat on the other side. I think it was, I forgot which Middle Eastern country, but they said that this country wanted to become one of the top 10 technological economic forces in the world by creating more jobs and more economic opportunities. And what he said to them with this, you know, wall, you know, breaking the room into male and female sides, is that you won't be able to do that unless you give women a chance to participate in the economy. And we've done so in America, but now we just need to give them more opportunities to rise to the top.
844-942-7866 is the number if you'd like to join in. We're talking about the issues surrounding gender pay. Marcy Hart from Fox Rothschild here in Philadelphia joining us in the studio. Jennifer Carey, who's CEO of JLC Environmental, joining us on the phone. 844-942-7866. Now, part of this discussion, we wanted to go to the reporting by the Commercial Real Estate Women's Network. Jennifer, tell us what we're seeing here in terms of the commercial real estate market and some of the gender pay issues that are apparently there as well.
Well, we see that the gap. We've done benchmark studies for the last 15 years. We do them every 5 years. We work with MIT to create a questionnaire that we have been successfully getting a lot of respondents to commit to, and they've been giving us great data. And one of the things that we've seen is the needle has moved somewhat with regards to like the amount of money paid on the dollar. I think that we're 77 cents to the dollar that a man makes. But, you know, we've also seen an aspiration gap where 47% of men seek to have a opportunity to be in the C-suite, which is the CEO, CMO, COO, CIO, whatever the case may be, but only 27% of women do that. And, you know, we find that sometimes it's an issue of whether they want to commit the time and energy it takes to be in the C-suite, which is a very, you know, obviously a very important job, and there's a lot of time commitments to it. So we don't know what all the issues are surrounding it. There's some that are unconscious that we don't know. But again, we want to try to have the aspiration gap reduced. We know that oftentimes when there's a golf outing, women don't get invited to the foursome. They might not get invited on a fishing trip or a hunting trip, that maybe it's, you know, more male-oriented. But as we become more open in our business climates and in our individual companies, I think that those things will change. And Marcy, I know that you guys were fantastic supporters yesterday of having this luncheon that we had where we discussed these issues. What did you think about yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, I thought the program was an excellent forum, but I have to say one thing in particular, at least to me. The aspiration gap, I think, is solved through compensation. And I think that is really at the forefront of this discussion. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talk about transparency, and one thing should be noted that this transparency that we see with respect to Google or even with respect to the White House is pushed forward because of the federal government. If you are not in negotiations with the federal government or have contracts with the federal government, you are not required to disclose this information,
right,
and or comply with gender equality. So because of that, it creates, you know, a big hole. And I think that that is where, you know, we can make some headway.
The aspiration gap of which you both speak, that seemingly is an interesting piece to dig into a little bit more, because we're talking about, as you mentioned, pay being an issue in this. But I mean, for the most part, we're talking about an industry that does rely on commission quite a bit, correct?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, that gap in terms of pay would come from where? If are the commissions basically geared less for women than they are for men?
Go ahead, Jen.
Well, I was going to say that in commercial brokerage, there's a lot of commission-based but in regular companies like myself, we have an environmental consulting firm. We pay engineers and environmental scientists based on, you know, a base salary and then bonuses. But we don't have the issues that brokerage would have, where you kind of hunt something down and kill what you eat, what you kill, as they say.
Yeah.
But the aspiration gap that Marcy mentioned, the compensation that may change that gap is very important, because there's been some talk that women don't ask for raises, and I used to actually say that as well, because one of the things we like to do in Crew Network is give leadership opportunities, and also learn to ask, you know, for things like the ask for sponsorship or the ask for a raise. But what we did, part of our study is that we found out that there's a London Cass Business School and University of Warwick and University of Wisconsin joint study that showed that women do ask for increases in their pay, but only receive them 25% less than when men ask for a raise. And when you get to the C-suite gap, you'd think that the pay would be more equal, and you'd find more across the board the amounts that were equal to for men and women, but that actually even increases more in the C-suite, which is very surprising to us. So these are all things that we have to work on, and we're, you know, by putting out this research and getting it out there into the open and educating people, that is the key to change, we feel.
I agree. I think this discussion really is warranted, and I think the more the discussion, the more knowledge, the more that we actually address this kind of issue.
844-942-7866 is the number if you'd like to join in. 844-942-7866 is the number, or you can send us a comment via Twitter, and we'll bring it up on the show at BizRadio111, or my Twitter account, which is at DanLoney21. Jennifer brought up sponsorship or mentorship, as it's referred to in a variety of parlance. How important of an issue is that to this whole process?
I think it's critical. And an organization like Crew has really promoted women through mentorship and sponsorship.
Right.
You know, creating a situation where other women coming into an industry are able to reach out to other women who have succeeded or, you know, gotten to a place of some power in this industry, are able to kind of groom people, show them, teach them, give them promotions, opportunities at work and in networking.
Jennifer?
I would say Crew Network is very supportive of mentoring, and we do have we've had mentor programs and individual chapters. We have 74 chapters around North America and in the UK, and we want to see, especially between the people with less experience and more experience, we want to see them sharing ideas and to share experiences so that we can all benefit. But one of the things that is also important there is that we have a sponsorship component, because sponsorship is much different than mentorship. Sponsorship is when your boss or your managing director or the senior partner in their firm takes you along to important client meetings and, right. And brings you along to the golf outing, as we talked about before, or to the hunting trip, and gives you an opportunity and puts choice opportunity, you know, choice work, you know, like a project in front of you. If you're an architect, you get to get the project in Dubai, or if you're a lawyer, you get the big case that's going to be tried in front of the Supreme Court. Those are the kind of things that are sponsorship versus mentorship, which is much more like let's talk about experience and what can you do in this situation or that situation. But if we get more men and women to act as sponsors to the younger generation and show them how to operate on a bigger scale, I think that it'll, like, the rising tide raises all boats.
But this is not something, Jennifer, that you think is, to a degree, a generational issue, like we mentioned with Google. I mean, still you have a lot of younger people that are running very important pieces of Google and a lot of other companies as well, that this mindset of the younger generation will, to a degree, you know, tend to alleviate this problem as we go along through time. This is something that you can't rely on that aspect to really have change made, correct?
I would think so. I think it has to come individually, no matter what your age or your experience. We have to all be cognizant that change is important and that, you know, women have an important part in our economy, and we need to make sure that we're addressing their needs and their issues, and we'll be able to retain them. You know, there's a lot of great women that are out there in the workforce, but maybe don't get the opportunities, and that's where that sponsorship component comes in.
One of the things, I'm sorry, finish up.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, one of the things I saw in the report, the white paper that was done, was in terms of length of career, especially in the commercial real estate sector, there are not as many people that are in this career longer because of some of these issues, which I find interesting. I mean, and to a degree, it kind of goes back to the issues surrounding the aspiration. I mean, if the aspiration is lower among certain people, they will tend to look elsewhere for their career, correct?
Absolutely. And aspiration grows as confidence grows and opportunity grows.
Jennifer?
I agree wholeheartedly with what Marcy said. And as we progress into the future, I mean, I heard when I was on hold, Dan, that you're going to be doing a little piece on the Constitution later.
On the Declaration of Independence.
The Declaration of Independence,
yeah.
Excuse me. And one of the things that, and I'm not being political again, but one of the things the Declaration of Independence says is all men are created equal. There's no part in there about women created equal, but we want to see, I'm not asking for a change, but I'm just saying we need to make sure that we are addressing that, at least in the United States of America, which is, you know, the beacon of where, you know, economic opportunity is the place where all things happen and where you can rise from being, you know, a guy who lived in a trailer park to Bill Clinton being the president of the United States. So those are the kind of things that we want to, you know, see. And what our commercial real estate network does by this research is to highlight things we can do to change, some action items we need to work on to support women and anyone who's entering the commercial real estate industry to make it more of a great industry to be a part of.
Well, that was going to be my next question, Jennifer, is what are the expectations that you have coming off of this white paper? What are some of the hopes that you have? I mean, obviously, some of this you bring forth to a variety of the different companies that are in this industry and try and start to affect change over the next few months. But the hope is what in the end?
Well, we want to give our members more confidence to go about negotiations. We have a certificate of leadership program that we have been rolling out, and we have great speakers from Harvard Business School and MIT. We don't have anyone from Wharton yet, but we're working on that. And we want to see these women gain more confidence for going for the C-suite jobs. We want to see them to succeed in all areas of whatever they decide to do and whatever, you know, career path they take. Marcia, do you have anything to add on that?
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly, Jen, and I just think it's a great network and a resource for women in this industry, and I am sure and hope that other industries do the same.
I'm guessing, like a lot of people now, as this Google story kind of develops, you know, in the weeks and months to follow, this will be a very important case to watch to see how this all plays out, because this is seemingly going to be a case that has the opportunity to really affect not only Google, not only Silicon Valley, but so many businesses and sectors across the United States.
Right. It will call for transparency by these major companies. And knowing that this data is possibly going to be available to the public, I think will have a great effect and hopefully a stunning effect on the gender bias.
Right. Jen?
One of the things our benchmark study points out is that transparency of compensation within a company does lead to more equality in terms of salaries and compensation. So one of the things, I mean, not every company does that. We have an open book company where we like to share our financial data with our employees so that they know where we stand. And we, not everyone is cognizant of everyone else's salaries, but we're fairly open about it. And I think that that does lead to a level of equality that we would see if more companies did adopt that. Not everyone's going to do that, but we did find in our research that the more open book financials you have within your firm also leads to better outcomes in terms of women staying in the workforce, because you spend a lot of money to train and to bring women and men along to become active parts of your company. You want them to succeed. So having them get that opportunity is important, and you don't want them to leave because of something like a pay gap.
But it also comes at a time, and we've talked about this on this show before, about how whether it be employee to employee or employee to employer, the idea of understanding who's getting paid what and talking about it is actually a little bit more free than it was if you went back 40 or 50 years right now, Jennifer. I mean, it's still not a totally open subject in most companies, yet still it is being broached quite a bit more than what it was, as I said, 30, 40 years ago.
Yes, I believe it's true. That's true. What I see experientially.
The other thing I was going to say that's interesting is this, pay gap has been a discussion for, 30 or 40 years?
Yeah.
However, it's only recently that we see the Department of Labor and other organizations cause or force the transparency and force these companies to disclose the actual pay data.
Well, and I guess to a degree, it does help that the government is finally coming around on this. And obviously some of the moves that the government has made recently in terms of their contractors and making sure that that the pay levels are understood and above board, and making sure that not only people are being paid properly, but being paid on a similar level. As you said, they're getting around to it. Like, unfortunately, a lot of things in Washington, it takes a while to get to it. But again, it's something that's starting. So therein lies at least the start of the silver lining right there.
Exactly. Maybe equality is really politically correct.
Right. Jennifer?
Well, I just think one of the things that came to my mind when you were speaking is that we have one of our components of the research, which you can find it, by the way, at www.crewnetwork.org, and just look for, search for research, is that men and women, in the 2015 benchmark study that we did, which is related to our white papers, which is what we're talking about with the gender unconscious bias, mm-hmm. is that men and women right now in 2015 had the equal number of direct reports. So women are having the same amount of management responsibilities as their male counterparts, but yet the pay gap still exists. So we do need to continue to work on all of these aspects because we're not just... We're doing a lot in companies, and we're working very hard, and we just want to be compensated properly for those kind of activities.
Great to have you both with us. Thank you, Jennifer, for joining us on the phone today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. Marcy, great to have you here.
Thank you so much.
For more insight from Knowledge at Wharton, please visit knowledge.wharton.upenn.edu.